So we're holding on Sedic Aleph, Amud Aleph, the seventh line. We're in the middle of discussing the question. The Chachamim say, and this is the halacha, that Gidan Nosher applies equally to both thighs of the animal, both legs of the animal. But Rabbi Yehuda says it applies to only one, and he says, Vadas Nachras, logic, Das dictates that it would be the right one. So the question is, what does he mean by Das? Do we mean Das Torah, as in Rabbi Yehuda has a proof from some previous Torah source that it's that way? Or is it Das Nota, is it logical Das? Which, okay, logic can get you so far, but it doesn't tell you 100% for sure that it is so. So in other words, the point is, we have to figure out, does Rabbi Yehuda know definitively that it applies only to the right, or is it a suffix by him? So the Gemara says, a toshma, so we'll bring a proof as follows. Suppose a person ate a kazayis of each of the two gidin, from the right leg and from the left leg. And there's a asura for each one. Rashi points out, we can't be talking about, the Brais can't be talking about that he ate the two of them, that he just ate the two of them together, because the fact that it says mizek, the fact that it says kezayis mizeu, mizek kezayis, mizek kezayis, implies that it's a separate kezayis and a separate asura and all that from each one. So, the Brais says, sofig shmonim, then he's getting 80 malchus, which is to say 78 really, in other words, but in other words, he gets double malchus, because each one of them is an issur. He ate one, and they gave masra, they gave masra, he ate the other, so it's two separate actions of issurim, and therefore two malchus. Rabbi Yehuda says he gets only 40 malchus. Now, if you say Rabbi Yehuda says as a poshita thing that only the one of the right leg is also midaraisa, in other words, das Torah, that he knows from a solid Torah source that it is so shatter. Well, then good. Then we understand why he's getting malchus, why he's getting any malchus, because one of them that he ate, the one from the right leg, is unquestionably osir. Eli amasapuki misakale, but if you say Rabbi Yehuda has a suffix, which one is the one that's osir? How could you give him malchus in the first place? Havila hasra suffix. Isn't an asra suffix? Every time they give him asra, they can't tell him for sure, don't eat this, you're definitely going to be chayav malchus. Don't eat this, you might be chayav malchus. It might be the one that also. And the Shemin and Leather Behoda Dama Asra Suffolk Leshma Hasra. And we know Rabbi Yehuda holds that Asra Suffolk is not a valid Hasra. As we know, as we learned in the previous Perek as well, or two Perekim ago rather, in connection with Osev Es Vinoy, we learned that Rabbi Yehuda holds that, you know, that Hasra Suffolk doesn't work. The Tanya, we learned in a Brisa. We have a case where you have a case of a boy who doesn't know who his father is. There's two possible people who might be his father, as we learned, and his mother remarried within 3 months after her husband divorcing her. Ordinarily, by the way, this kind of thing of a Suffolk on parentage could also be if he died, but since we're talking about over here that he hits him later on, obviously the ex-husband has to be alive, so we're talking about he divorced her, she remarried within 3 months, and now she has a baby after 7 months, and we don't know, is it a 7 month baby from the second husband or a 9 month baby from the first one. So now it's Bryce says hikas there, because of the hikas there. So now if this boy hits one of those two men and then goes and hits the other one, where a person is chayav misa for hitting his father and injuring him, he's chayav chene. But here you don't know which one is his father. Well, killulas zev chazulah killulas there. He cursed one and then cursed the other, which if we know which one it is, then he's chayav skila. Or hikashneim vasachas, he hit both of them at one time. He stretched out his two hands and then hit both, one with the right and one with the left. He took a stick and whacked both of them. We talked about in the previous parak, Rashi brings in different places various possibilities of how he could have hit both of them vasachas with a long stick or with his two hands at the same time or whatever. It could also be Vasachas, could also mean one right after the other within the same Asura. So different places in Shas Rashi give different explanations. Anyway, Osha Kilo Shneim Vasachas, or he cursed both of them Vasachas, Chayev, then he's going to be Chayev, because one way or the other, he hit or he cursed his actual father. Rabbi Yehuda said no, Vasachas Chayev, if it was Vasachas, which would mean that, for example, so both with one long stick or the toast to the jibber or whatever, then yes, he can be chayav because no question he hit or cursed his father. But Rabbi Yehuda says bezach or zeh, if it was one after the other, if he was about to hit one and they told him don't, this is your father, and the other one don't, this is your father, then you can't, then he's potter, because each one is only asura suffolk, because they don't know that it's his father. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda holds asura suffolk is not asura. Now, in our braisa, if he's eating the kazayas from one and they gave him asurah, and a kazai is from the other, and they gave him asurah. If Rabbi Yehuda has a suffix, which one is the one that's actually asur, then he can't give him malchus at all. Because even though, yes, inevitably he ate the one that is asur, but each one was asurah suffix. And the answer is fine. Fine, Tana. Savalakita of Tana Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. That the Tana of this Braisa could hold like another Tana, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, who learns the Omar Asura Safik Shema Yisrael. Where a different version is that Rabbi Yehuda does hold that Asura Safik is valid. Meaning, again, in a case like that, where one way or the other, he definitely was over on the Yisrael, then we can say that that between the two Asuras, one of them was valid, and he gets Malchus or whatever penalty for it. As we know that from a different Braisa, which also we learned in that connection with Osef Esminoi, the Tanya, we learn a Braisa, the Pasuk says, Loisei Sidum Imenu Anvot Levigrim, don't leave over from the Korban Pesach until the morning, and the Pasuk continues, and if you do leave it over, then burn it. So Barakas of Litten Esach HaLoisese, with that, the Pasuk is giving you an Esach, following Loisese, Loimasha in Loiken Olav, what tells you that you don't get Malchus for it, Dibri Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. We know that one of the categories of Lavim that you don't get Malchus for is Lavan Nitek LaEsach, where the Torah tells you don't do this, but if you did this, then do the other thing. We'll have at the end of the Masechta, for example, we'll have an example of that with Shiluach HaKam. Don't take the mother bird with the when she's still sitting on the chicken. But if you did, then shalach to shalach and send her away. So the person doesn't get malchus for such lav. And we'll learn at the end of the Masechta actually if we'll talk about bitloy vele kimoy. What about if it's impossible to do the essay now? We'll talk about that then. But in any case, here the point is that he left over. He was over lav, but now the Torah gives him an essay. Go burn it. Give it to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, he doesn't get malchus. Rabbi Yaakov says that's not the reason why he doesn't get Malchus, Elamish from to have a lav she'en by Maisa. The reason is because it's a lav she'en by Maisa, because it's just as a passive thing. He left over it. The whole lav she'en by Maisa. And look at all of it, a person doesn't get Malchus specific. Now, though, we see, though, it's a whole Silvius and the Septa Marcus. We see, though, there that according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a good enough reason. Because, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say, rather, the reason why you can't give him Malchus is because it's Asura Sufik. Every time they give him Asura, don't leave over it. Well, it's still an hour till Chatzos. I have plenty of time. It's getting closer. Don't leave over for it. It's almost Chatzos. Fine, I still have time. They would have to time it and give Masura exactly at a moment where he doesn't have time to eat it before Chatzos, and then realistically they're not going to be able to do that. So therefore it's going to be Hasura Sufik all the time. And that's for us to be the Tefkede Dibur of the action, after all. So therefore we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds Hasra Suffolk is a valid Hasra, and they could have given him Malchus because of that, because every time they give him Hasra, and it's only a Suffolk, are you going to leave over from it or not, then it could be a valid Hasra, and the only reason to pass to him is because Lav Anitek La'Esseh, because afterwards there's an essay involved. So we see that according to this version of Rabbi Yehuda, Hasra Suffolk is a valid Hasra. Well, very well then, the previous Braisa could go according to that, and say that the reason why he gets Malchus when he ate from the two different thighs is because either one Hasra or the other necessarily has to have been the proper Hasra. Okay, so still no proof how Rabbi Yehuda knows that it's the right leg. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. Another Braisa says, Ochol shnei gidim mishtei vireches mishtei behemes. If a person ate two gidanoshes from the two different right thighs of two different animals, sofeg shmoinim, then he gets double malchus. This also we learned over there. Rabbi Yehuda oimer ene sofeg ala aboyim. Rabbi Yehuda says he gets only one time malchus. So now, mitkama mishtei yireches mishtei behemes. Now here already, unlike the previous braisa, which just said that he ate mizek kazayis, which can mean from the right leg and the left leg respectively, here you have, it's clear, it says from two right thighs of two different animals, mashma, so therefore, so pshitit tabayu liyisura. Obviously, both of them must be osu, spulu Rabbi Yehuda, itzrich, and therefore the chiddush is according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to the chachamim, there's no chiddush in it. Of course, it's two different gidanotras and two different animals and two asuras. Of course, he's getting double malchus. The very fact that, so what's the chiddush? So there's no chiddush in the braisa that according to the chachamim, he's getting double malchus. The chiddush is specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's necessary, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to tell us. Nevertheless, though, the fact is, he is getting malchus. So that shows that he does in fact hold that the right one is the one that's definitely osu. So therefore, because otherwise it would be a suffix iser. So therefore, good. Shmamina, that proves that Rabbi Yehuda actually has das Torah. He has a proof from Torah, as the Gemara is going to go on to show soon, that in fact it definitely applies only to the right leg, and therefore that if he eats that, he's definitely chayv malchus. Okay, well, Gemara says, V'pshitalei, well, if Rabbi Yehuda knows it for sure, my sotah gavoyim v'tuloi, then why is he getting only one malchus? Luki shmoinim. The fact is, you should be getting double malchus, if assuming they gave him separate hasidah for each one, which the pashtus is the case. So the answer is that toch maskin and the less boy kezayis. The answer is that each individual gudanosha does not not the size of a kezayis. The Tanya, as we learn in the Brisa, ochle ve'en be kezayis. Suppose you eat the gudanosha and it's not the size of a kezayis, and usually a kezayis is the minimum amount to be chayev for eating in halacha. Nevertheless, chayev is still chayev because, as we learned previously, it's a barrier. It's an independent entity by itself, which is also just like a bug, for example, and therefore you can be chayav for that, even if it's not a kezayis. Rabbi Yehuda Omar, chayav a kezayis, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says only if it's a kezayis in size, because otherwise it's not considered, because he doesn't care about it being a barrier. He considers it to be part of the, a section of the animal, and therefore, so that's why he's only getting one malchus. If neither one was a kezayis, So we learned actually. The Bach points out over here on the side that when you say ein bein shneim el kezayis, means one of them is a kezayis and one is not. If neither one is a kezayis, then Rashi had pointed out earlier two shortcuts ago that if neither Rashi had brought an explanation that it means that one of them is that it means that neither of them is a kezayis, but between the two of them is a kezayis. But Rashi didn't like that explanation and said that no, it means one of them is a kezayis and the other one is not. So he's chayim for the one that's a kezayis and he's potter for the one that's not a kezayis, according to Rabbi Yehuda. We did say over there there were other Rishonim who learned differently and learned like that rejected Pirush of Rashi, that in fact even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that if there's a kezayis between the two of them, then he is chayav. Okay, so now that we've established that Rabbi Yehuda definitely holds that the right leg is the one where the gidanosha is also midaraisa. Maybe he would say the other one is chayav derabanan, is also derabanan, but at least daraisa. The time am I, why does Rabbi Yehuda hold that applies only to the right leg? Omar Rava, because what does the pasuk say about the gid anosha that we don't eat that you don't eat the gid asher al kaf hayoreth, that it says that's on the spoon of the thigh. Now hayoreth hamiyumenes shebiyoreth, it means the word hayoreth, the hay means the special one, the distinguished one among the two thighs, and therefore that would mean that the right, which the right is always preferred over the left in Torah. You have other examples of that where the Gemara brings that kind of thing as well, where hey means the special thing and nothing else. The Rabbanan, what the Rabbanan answer to that? They say no, the word Hayorek is not coming to teach us that it means not the one thigh and not the other. Ahud, Poshet Isurim, Isurim, Mekula Yerek. It means that the Isur spreads out throughout the whole thigh. The Gidanosha, the sciatic nerve, is long, it has many branchings throughout the leg, it's the main nerve of the leg. So therefore, so you have throughout the thigh, you have branches and sub-branches and so forth throughout the thigh. Mind you, Rabbi Yehuda himself holds later on in the parak that only the part that's ala kaf, he holds only the part that's on the thigh muscle is also, but the Chachamim are saying that first of all more of it is also, and all the branches of it are also as well. And as we learned at the beginning of the parak, according to the Meir, which is the Zalofa, you have to take out all those branches, which is why we very rarely see the legs of animals sold as kosher meat. La puki chitzin deloy, and all the Chachamim say is it means as opposed to the outer gid, which is not also daraisa. We touched on a little bit yesterday which gid is which. You have Rashi gives an explanation that the one that's also daraisa is what the Gemara called before pnimiya samoch la'etzem, the inner one which is closer to the bone, which Rashi describes. It's long and it runs along the width of that part of the thigh, and then branches of it spread out throughout the thigh. And then you have a chitza, and then you have an outer one. Then you have an outer one, which it actually describes as a short one that's also in the width, and then it gets embedded into the muscles over there, and it's on the outside. There's quite a bit of discussion. There's various pictures available, and there's quite a bit of discussion with also different minhagim on it. Which gid is which? Which one is the one that's also daraisa? Which one is the one that we're saying is only also darabanan? You've got the sciatic nerve, you've got the femoral nerve, you've got another one called the saphenous nerve, which branches off the sciatic nerve, and there are different opinions. The aronial nerves, you have a bunch of different nerves over there, and there's different opinions among the poskim and among different menhagim, which one is which. Okay. In any case, the Chacham say that's what it means. Hayorech, the gid that spreads throughout the whole thigh. Don't learn from it that it means only one thigh. Okay, so that's one way that Rabbi Huda holds that Rabbi Huda knows that Hayyorech means dafka the right one. That means that dafka the Isur is on the right one. But Rabbi Shurban Levi says another way. Amakra, the Pasuk describes how did this whole thing happen in the first place, that the Malach came and attacked him, and then the Pasuk says his Gidah Nosha was dislocated, Behe Ovkoi Imri, when Behe Ovkoi with him. Now we're understanding the word Behe Ovkoi, it means he wrestled with him, but we're understanding the word Behe Ovkoi to be related to the word Ovik, which means a loop. Which means a loop in Aramaic. So it's a lot of them. It's related to the word chivek in Hebrew, which means to hug. So in other words, to adam shechovek as chaver, right? So it's like a person who's hugging the other person face to face. The yodim agas for kafi minish shechaver, the kafi minish shechaver, and his hand wraps all around the other guy's side and reaches the other guy's right thigh. So in other words, they're wrestling together over there. The Malach has Yaakov in his arms and is wrestling with him. So he's reaching all around, and the end of his right arm, his hand touches Yaakov's right thigh. So therefore, Rabbi Huda says, well, that's the one that was dislocated. Then that should be the only one that's also. Okay. Another reason, Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni Amar, Koyv Tichavim Nid Melod. Another reason you could say is because the Malach appeared to Yaakov in the guise of a goyim. And to Omar Meir, now we learn in Gemara and Avodah Zarah, Yisrael Shemitpalo Eret Kachav Maderech. If a Yid encounters a goy on the way, and the goy wants to walk together with him, there's always the concern that the goy might pull out his weapon and harm the Yid. So what the Yid should do is he should have the goy walk on his right side. This way, if the goy tries to start up, then he'll have his right hand. Most people are righties, after all. So this way, with his right hand, he'll be able to grab whatever weapon the goy is going to have. Actually, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains in more detail that it depends what kind of weapon the goy might be carrying. The Gemara explains over there if he's holding a stick, then it's actually better to walk to his left. If the goy is holding a stick, then you want him on your left side, because then that way if he tries to pull out the stick, then you'll be able to grab it before he hits you. But if it's a sword, you can't grab it while he's about to do it. So you want the sword far away from you in the first place, and you want to be able to have your right hand available to defend yourself. The Maharam Shif points out this was a Malach of Esav. Esav has a sword. Therefore, we can assume his Malach had a sword as well, and therefore, this is Maharam Shif. Yeah. So therefore, that's the reason why Yaakov would have the guy on his right. Now, what happens then when he attacks Yaakov? Which thigh is closest to him that he hits? The right one. Therefore, Rabbi Huda says, therefore, Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani says, there's another way that Rabbi Huda gets that it was Yaakov's right thigh that was injured. Another reason, Rav Shmuel Ba'acha, Kameh Rav Papa, Rav Shmuel Ba'papa one time was sitting in front of Rav Papa as a Talmud, Mishmeder Rav Ba'ula Omar, and he said in the name of Rav Ba'ula, Ketamad Chocham, Yidmaloy. Here's another answer, the Malach appeared to Yaakov as a Tamad Chocham. You know what? Even Esav himself, by the way, there's a Rishima from the Deber Hashab that says, you know, you think Esav walked around like with, like looking like one of these Russian peasants or whatever, with an axe stuck in there. He looked, it was a Zaytna Zupitze. He had a, you know, he looked for all the world like a chassid, and he's still an Esav. So now we're saying that, his Malach also appears as a Talmud Chacham. So he appears as a Talmud Chacham. The Omer Meir and we learn in a Brisa, Hamahalach Limin Rabbi Harez Abur. If a Talmud walks on the right side of his Rebbe, then he's acting as a Bur, he's acting as an Amoritz, he doesn't even have the proper Chochmah of Derech Eretz. So Yaakov would be walking to the left of the Malach, with the Malach to his right. And again, when the Malach attacked him, then he hit him on the right side. There's an interesting vote they say on that. You know, of course, all the Darshanim and all the Farshanim throughout the generations have all had an endless number of explanations on the whole story over here and every detail of it in the Psukim and in the Gemaras and Midrashim and everything. One vote that's said on it is that here, the Sar Shal Esav, which is also, you know, the Sar Shal Esav is the Malach Samach Mem, which is also, he's also the Yetzahara, he's also the Satan, etc. So the Yetzahara is like that. Sometimes he'll appear as a Goy, not just the Yetzahara, but all the challenges that we face in Golos. Sometimes they appear outright as a hostile goy, do what we tell you or we're going to kill you. And sometimes they appear at the time of Chacha and, you know, we have good ideas and you should follow us or whatever. So therefore, in other words, you have to be wary of these kinds of things, whether they come in the guise of a goy or of a time of Chacha. So anyway, so there you have various reasons to say why was Yaakov's right thigh dafka that was injured. Rabbanan, now what are the Rabbanan answer to all that? They say, what are you talking about? The Malach attacked him from behind, and he hit him in both legs at the same time, and therefore there's no reason to say that one should be also more than the other, and both of them are also. Okay, but Rabbanan high behe ofke imen mai darshi behe, fine, so what are the Chachamim doing with the words behe ofke imai? So Rabbi Yehuda had said that behe ofke means like he hugged him in a wrestling position, but what are the Chachamim do with that? And the answer is Mibola Lachiduch to Rabbi Shurban Levi. They use it to teach us a different statement that Rabbi Shurban Levi said. Rabbi Shurban Levi, Malamat Shehelu Avak Magaloisem Ad Kiseh Akovet. It means that the dust of their feet when they're wrestling and fighting with one another, the dust of their feet went all the way up to the Kiseh Akovet. What that means, we'll explain in a second. And how do we know that? What's the Kiseh HaKavod got to do with it? Ksiv HaChavei Ovko Yimei. Here you have this pasuk that says Dehei Ovko Yimei, where the Chacham are taking the word Dehei Ovko to be related to the word Ovok, which means dust. Uchtiv Hashem, and you have a pasuk describes them metaphorically describing Hashem. The Onan Avak Raglav, a cloud is the dust of his feet. So we see that the dust is mentioned in connection, so to speak, with the feet of Hashem, and therefore it means that it went all the way up to the Kiseh HaKavod. So what does that mean? The Rashba and the Gemara, the Rashba has a Pirush on a Gadfer over here on the Gemara. He has a long explanation of Bechlal, what the whole symbolism is of this fight, and why we have an eternal mitzvah because of it. I mean, we don't have eternal mitzvahs because of individual events in the lives of most of the other events in the life of the Ovis. Why is this one so special? And he explains the whole thing is a metaphor for what we're going to experience in Golos, that whole night, representing the whole night of Golos. We have to constantly be fighting against Esav, the original Esav, and later on the Romans, and later on the Christians, and so on and so forth. In the end, we come out victorious, just like Yaakov did, but it's a hard thing, and there are casualties along the way, Rahman al-Islam, both Pagashmius and Biruchmius. So he says, the vote is then that it went all the way up to the key. So he says the word regal, a foot, also means because of, like, and dust is the result of, yeah, when you have a struggle, then you have dust. So it means in other words that the causes and the effects of their whole fight, this whole historic fight for thousands of years, reaches all the way up to the Kiseh HaKavod. In particular, they have their own notion of the Goyim have their own notion of the Kiseh HaKavod and of Hashem and of everything of that, and they try to force us into theirs, and we fight against them, and eventually and every time we come out victorious, Baruch Hashem. So that represents, in other words, the dust of their feet, the causes and effects of all of that reverberate throughout history. And have to do even with the Kiseh HaKavod, with Hashem's presence in the world, and Hashem's presence in the world altogether. Different Mephoshim talk about the Tliyoko, the Malbim talk about that. It also symbolizes the idea that Malach himself is trying to destroy Yaakov's Amuna in the Edishtet, representing again that he's throwing up dust all the way to the Kiseh HaKavod, like as if to obscure the Kiseh HaKavod, that Yaakov shouldn't pay any attention to it anymore. Now, there's many, many different explanations of this little piece over here. But the Gemara continues. So why is this part called the Gidan Nosha? Because it jumped out of its place and went up. It got dislocated, in other words. And we see the word Nosha means that. As the Pasuk describes about Babel, when it's going to be conquered by Paras Umadai, their strength is Nosha, has jumped away from them. They became weak like women. So we see that the word Shodash Nosha means to move away and to be dislocated, like their strength got dislocated from them. The Gemara continues, Amr Rav Shurban Levi, my dichtiv, Amr Rav Yosef Chanina, my dichtiv, a pasuk in Yeshaya, Dover Sholach Hashem B'Yakov, Dover Sholach B'Yakov, it says in the printed Gemara, the actual pasuk says, Dover Sholach Hashem B'Yakov. Hashem sent a word or a matter in Yaakov, the Nafal B'Yisrael, and it fell in Yisrael. So in context, this is the introduction to a nevuah that he's saying over there to the Jewish people. Well, what's this expression? It means Dabar Sholach B'Yakov. Hashem sent a matter in Yaakov. Zegiranosha. That refers to this Giranosha that Hashem sent the Malach and he attacked Yaakov and injured him in his body. The Nafal B'Yisrael, and what does it mean? It fell among Jewish people. It means Shanaf Shaposhat Yisrael before Yisrael, that the Yisrael of it spread throughout the Jewish people. That again, we're not just talking about this is not some minor event that happened in Yaakov's lifetime, and that's it. We don't commemorate it any more than we do any other events in their lifetimes. No, this is something major, that the Nafal B'Yisrael, because of it, there's a permanent mitzvah that applies to the Jewish people. Rav Shamshon of Fall Hirsch on this pasuk has a very interesting explanation of what, it, after all, what does the context of that pasuk have to do with Gid Anasha? So he explains like this. If you look in the pasuk in Yeshaya after this pasuk, Yeshaya is telling the people, you have this notion that even though you've been attacked by Mitzrayim and Asher and whatnot, and you've been harmed and injured and whatever, nevertheless, you're saying for yourself, doesn't matter, we're going to build back better and stronger than before, and forgetting about that the Eidishter runs the world. So now the Navi is reminding them, you know what? What's the whole idea of Gid Anasha in the first place? Is you don't stand on your own two feet in the world. Without the Eibishter, you wouldn't. Yaakov himself limps through the world. The only thing that makes him able to stand is the fact that Eibishter is on his side and helped him defeat the Malach. If you don't realize that Eibishter is on your side, then no, you're not going to be rebuilding and building back better every time. So he's introducing this Nevuah to them by telling them, reminding them that you learn the lesson from the Gid Anasha and realize it's not your own powers that's going to help you, it's the Eibishter. So the Gemara continues. Another thing about the Gid Anasha. A few parashiyos later, the brothers are in Mitzrayim the second time with Binyamin. Yosef tells his steward, who was Manasseh, that to go invite them into the house of Tvoyach Tevach Vachochin and shecht an animal and prepare. What's this expression? Utvoyach and Vachochin. So it means Yosef tells him Pralahen Beis Hashkita, uncover for them the Beis Hashkita, show them the area of the neck where you shechted, so that they don't have to think that I'm about to feed them treif meat. Rashi points out that the Yaakov's sons were keeping mitzvahs. The Torah wasn't given yet, but there was still makobo from their ancestors, from Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, that to keep the mitzvah of shechita. So show them, says Yosef to Menashe, that you actually shechted it properly. The Torah Gid Anasha v'hochein, and when it says v'hochein, prepare it, means Torah Gid Anasha v'fneim, take out the Gid Anasha in their presence, also to show that we're following their rules for food. And that would be Commander Omer Gid Anasha Nasa L'Bnei Noach. This would follow the opinion that we learned yesterday of Rabbi Yehuda that says that Gid Anasha was also even to Bnei Noach, meaning even to Yaakov's children, when they still have the status of Bnei Noach before the Torah was given, that already it was also to them. So therefore, Yosef has to be able to reassure them that in fact it was done. Tosfos points out that, look, you know, even if it wasn't also, maybe Shita wasn't specifically given to them yet, and they're keeping it. So Tosfos says, first of all, the fact that it says v'hochein, prepare it, implies that otherwise it would have been also. And also, Tosfos says, maybe not. When Rashi is saying, pralahem beis hashchita, show them that it was shechted properly, then it means that show them that it would, that you knew nechira, we didn't stab the animal or kill it in some other way. Tosfos says, maybe not, actually. Maybe indeed. As Bnei Noach, they're not yet mitzvah l'shchita, as we learned earlier in the Masech, and maybe they are indeed allowed to do nechira. The animal can't just have died naturally. It has to have been killed somehow. But maybe tralahem beis hashchita means show them that it was killed in some way, which is valid for them. Not necessarily what we have as shchita, but no, so they don't eat ev menachai at least, but show them that the Gid Anasha has been removed, because after that they're mitzvah. It's an interesting sikha where the Rebbe talks about, you know, when you get that different, actually, well, first of all, you've shown him, point out of any, and so what good does that do? You know, shchitas goy is also, they don't know yet that this is Yosef and this is his son. As far as they know, they're dealing with an Egyptian official. So what good does it do if he shows them that he shechted it? It's still going to be, so the Rebbe has a whole sikha about it in Chelukam, and the gist of it is that, in fact, Rashi on the Pasuk doesn't specifically mention about this whole business about the Gid Anasha and the shchita and all that. So Rashi explains. So the Rebbe explains that basically, at least according to Pshut Lashon Mikra, the vote is, it's not so much that Yosef needs to show them that everything is done 100% kedas or kedil. The point is, he wants to show them, I know everything about you. I know what minhagim you guys have as far as food, including shchita or nechira, as Tosfos says, and Gid Anasha, and I'm being sensitive to that, but it shows that I know everything about you, and therefore now later on, this also sets the scene later on for the whole thing with the goblet, where it's much easier for him to say, you know what, I know what you guys are thinking, I know what kind of people you are, because I already know even all your customs. Fine. Okay, getting back to Yaakov and the Malach, let's talk about that. The pasuk says, "Vayivosu Yaakov levado." Yaakov was left alone. So why is he alone? The pasuk says he brought all his possessions and all his family across the Yabrik. Omer Abelazer, shenishtayra pachim ketanim. This is Yaakov stayed behind to get some small jugs that he hadn't brought over before. All the important things and all the cattle and everything he had already brought over. So all he has is the pachim ketanim that were left, and then it got dark and he still was busy with them. So why didn't he just leave them? The Kama Tzadikim, Shekhov Valem, Amonim, Yosemichofam. So we see that Tzadikim, their possessions are more precious to them even than their body, meaning they're willing to put themselves at a temporary minor risk in order to save even their Pachim Tanim. The Chokach Lama, why is that? The Fishayin Poshni, Dan the Gezel, because they don't stretch out their hands and Gezel. Every single thing that a Tzadik has is honestly earned, and therefore even the smallest things he knows he can use as an avoider for the Ebishter, and if even the tiniest things are of importance to him. There's an interesting explanation from Rishonim that says, how does the Gemara know Pachim Tanim? Why not something else? One interesting explanation is the Gemara darshins the word Levadai as if it's a Lechadai, with a chof instead of a vase, and a kag is a jug. Right? So therefore, that means he stayed behind for his drugs. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. The passage says about Ya'ol v'kishim ad alois ha-shachar, and a man wrestled with him until alois ha-shachar. From here we see that a Tamar Chacham should not go alone out at night. Yaakov was alone and he got injured. The Mazikim, Tosfos points out, are especially jealous against the Tamar Chacham, and the Gemara also mentions elsewhere that also a king and a chosin for the same reason. This is why we have a shomer for a chosin and a kala throughout the whole week. So therefore, you shouldn't go out yichidi balayla. So what was Yaakov thinking to do that? So Ben Yehoyada points out it was Pesach night, and you have a full moon, and the Gemara elsewhere mentions that a full moon is considered like you have somebody else with you. But then another explanation is also Yaakov figured it's a Dvar Mitzvah. In any case, Tosfos does point out, though, that we do have a different Gemara in Pesachim that says a person should always, Yikonis v'kitoy v'yetzi v'kitoy, a person should always leave the city only when it's daylight and come in only when it's daylight. So why dafka tamar chacham? So it means over there you're talking about when it's far away from the city, and there are all kinds of dangers on the high roads, on the highways between robbers and wild animals, plus mazikim and all that, between cities. Here we're talking about in a city or in a relatively settled area, so it's only a tamar chacham. Shouldn't go out alone by night. Rab Abba Bakahana Omar, Rab Abba Bakahana says you have a different source in a pasuk to show that you shouldn't do this. By Boaz, Nomi tells Ruth, you're going to go meet Nomi, you're going to go meet Boaz tonight. And where will you find him? You'll find him in his granary. He's going to be winnowing his granary of barley. And Pasuk goes on to say that he's going to sleep there overnight in the granary. And then you'll find him over there. So in other words, the point is, so Nomi says after he's finished winnowing it, he's not going to go home to sleep because a Talmud Chacham like him is not going to go out alone by night. So necessarily he's going to sleep in the granary. And therefore she tells Ruth, and that's where you'll find it. Rabbi Bohu says you have another source for it. By the Akedah, by Yashkim Avram Baboter, by Yachvesh, Rimmer. Avram woke up early in the morning and he saddled his donkey and left. Now we see only Baboter. Now this is Hashem that told him, and Avram is Zoriz, not given the mitzvahs, so why is he not leaving even before daylight? Because the Talmud Chacham shouldn't go out alone at night. Now Rashi points out he wasn't even a Yochid. He had Yitzchok with him, and Shmuel, and Eliezer, and even so he didn't leave by night. Tosfos though doesn't like that explanation precisely because he had all those people with him and Shluchim Mitzvah in Nizokin and a bunch of questions. So Tosfos says no. What the pasuk that Gemara is referring to is a different Vayashkim Avraham Aboker, not where it continues Vayashkim Shas Hamoder, but Vayashkim Avraham Aboker that Avraham got up in the morning early to daven for Sidurim. What happened? He davened for Sidurim. If they have 15 people, if they have 45, the whole, he ended up, there's not even 10 Tzadikim over there. And then the Malachim went and destroyed the place. Next morning, the pasuk says, Avraham got up early, Al-Makam Asha'al Marcham, to the place where he had davened, and he wants to daven again, and he finds it's too late, the city has been destroyed. And the point is that there, now why didn't he get up earlier? Because he didn't want to go out alone at night. Now why alone? So let him take somebody else with him. Tosfos says, first of all, he didn't want necessarily when he's davening to the Eibishter that anybody else should be with him. Second of all, also Tosfos says, it's not so much that he was caught by surprise. He knew now that Sidurim was going to be destroyed. When he got up early in the morning, it was actually to see what happened. And not everybody is worthy to see that Sidurim was destroyed. We see that Lot's wife turned around and she got turned into a pillar of salt. So the same way, that would be another reason why Avraham went alone. But then, again, he should have gotten up earlier, but because Tamar Chacham, therefore he waited until then. Rabbanan say he was yet another source for the idea that Tamar Chacham shouldn't go out alone at night. Yaakov tells Yosef, Lech no re'e es shlemachecha ves shlemodem. Go look out for the welfare of your brothers and of the sheep. Now he says, re'e, see, which implies go there and leave at a time when people can see. Marshall points out, in other words, because the usual expression to look after somebody's welfare, the usual expression in Tanakh is it doesn't use the shortish ra'a. It's usually sha'al. by Yishal the Shloimo or whatever, Sukkim and like that. So when Yaakov tells him Re'ei, then it implies he's telling him Dafka leave by Gay. So you have a number of different proofs for this point that Tamar Chacham shouldn't go out alone at night. First, we should talk about why do we need so many proofs? Because not everyone is so solid. For example, with Avraham, again, he does have different people with him. With Boaz, for example, the Medrash tells us a different reason why he slept overnight in the granary is because there were thieves, and there was a time when there were lots of thieves, and he needed to guard his grain pashut. And for that matter, why couldn't Boaz walk home with a couple of his workers or whatever? So therefore, you need various different psukim to prove this point. Yeah. Rav Omer Mehacha. Rav here says here's a different proof that Tamar Chacham shouldn't go out by night because the pasuk says Vayizrach Lo Yashemesh. The pasuk says the sun rose for him, implying that only when the sun rose, only then did he go on his way. This is after Yaakov. So this is in that very story of Yaakov fighting with the Malach. So Alois HaShachar comes and the Malach wants to leave, and then Yaakov tells him he has to bench me, etc., etc. And then the pasuk says a few psukim later Vayizrach Lo Yashemesh, that the sun rose for him as he's passing the Penuel. So we see that he only left when it's light. So in other words, he learned his lesson from her and then wasn't going to go out himself by night anymore. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Omer Rav Akiva. So now Rav Akiva says in this connection, let's understand this passage of Vayizrach Lo Yashemesh. So the gist that we have in front of us is now the Gemara is going to say a new thing. Now that we brought this passage, Vayizrach Lo Yashemesh, then we have to understand what's this question, Vayizrach Lo Yashemesh. The sun rose for him. It rises for the whole world. On the other hand, the Maharam Shift says that the Maharam Shift explains that actually this is part of Rav's truth. Because the fact that the pasuk is by Yizrach Lo Yashemesh, and we're going to explain what it means, that what the special meaning of by Yizrach Lo Yashemesh, that demonstrates that Yaakov waited until the sun actually rose. Now for him, we're going to say it rose early, but nevertheless, he waited until it rose before he went. So Omer Rav Akiva, Omer Rav Akiva is how Maharam Shif has it. That Rav Akiva says, Sha'altius Rav Gamliel vs Rav Yeshua, at one time I asked Rav Gamliel and Rav Yeshua, the Ithlis shall imom in the marketplace of the butchers, shall imom of imom, which is a city in Eretz Yisrael, Shahofu, Likak Vahemel, the Mishnah, Rav Gamliel, they had gone over there to buy an animal for the wedding of Rav Gamliel's son. So while they were there, in that meat market, Rav Akiva says, I asked them the following question. We find a number of places in Shas, actually, where we have an example in the Sefer Tristus as well, where it also mentions that Rav Akiva asked them a question on that occasion. It comes out, and the point of why do I have to mention that point, is they're constantly fachif in Torah, even when they're busy preparing for a wedding, and they have to look for the best animal or whatever, they're still constantly, their mind is in Torah all the time. Anyway, Rav Akiva asked him, "Ksid by Yizrach Lo Yashemesh." Here, the pasuk is saying that the sun rose for him. What do you mean? Yashemesh Lo Levad Zorcha. The sun didn't just rise for him, for Yaakov. Ba'alo v'chol olam zorcha. It's shone for the whole world. So it should be said by Yizrach Hashemesh. What's the Lord? And the answer is, Omer Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak explains. So I guess the pashtus they gave him the answer, and later on, Rav Yitzchak also said it. It means Shemesh Abba Bavurei Zorcha Bavurei. It means the sun, which previously had set early because of him, now it rose early for him. Where did it set early for Yaakov? Dichtiv. The pasuk says, "Vayetsa Yaakov Beersheva Vayelach Charana." Yaakov left Beersheva and went to Charan. Now, Poshet Pshat, you could say, as Rashi says on the pasuk, Charana means he's going in the direction of Charan, and then on the way he stopped over at Hana Maria. But Charana, but now the Gemara is understanding that Charana means he went all the way, literally to Charan. Ochtiv Vayifka Bamakom, and then the pasuk says that he encountered the place. Rashi brings this also on the pasuk again. So he went to Basel. Rashi, by the way, has a whole long explanation over there in the Pesukim, that Basel, on one level, Basel is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. Basel also means the house of Hashem, and it means Yerushalayim. And then Rashi explains that actually when the Gemara talks about the Kfitz Zaderach, in a couple of lines, when the Gemara talks about the Kfitz Zaderach that Yaakov had, Rashi understands it means that Yerushalayim was brought closer to Basel, which is where Yaakov was at the time. So in other words, it's both based in the geographical area and that Yerushalayim was brought there. Other Mefarshim, Rashi himself, though, brings also, though, from the Medrash that the ladder is that's a part of the ladder, the middle of it is over Yerushalayim and the top of it is over Beis El, which is where Yaakov was sleeping. And different other Mefarshim talk about different ways of what it means exactly. Right. One thing is, by the way, you know, when we have Yerovam with his Egle HaZahav later on, Yerovam set up one of his Egle HaZahav in Beis El, and we find a number of other places in connection with Yaakov that also show up in the story of Yerovam. The Pasuk says that he lived in Shechem for a while, and Yaakov lived in Shechem. He rebuilt Phnuel, which was the first place that Yaakov went to, and named after the fight with the Malachs. And Mefarshim explained that Yerovam is as part of his whole propaganda campaign among the Jewish people to try to convince them of the Egel Hazav. He's trying to make himself like a second Yaakov, and therefore that they should follow him. So now he put one of them in Beis El, as if to say, look, Yaakov made this a whole. So Vayifka b'makom, so he encountered the place. He went all the way from Be'er Sheva to Haran. How is he now in Beis El? So what happened was, Taka went and came all the way to Haran. Omar, he says to himself, Efsha avarti amokom she's followed by a voice, how could it be I passed by the place on Haran Maria where my father was Avraham and Yitzchak davened over there by the Akedah, Yaakov, Yitzchak also davened over there by Yitzchak, Lasuach Vasodeh, Rashi brings from Gemara and Sofim that Avraham called it a har, a mountain. Yitzchak called it a sodeh, a field. Yaakov called it a bayis, a house, which represents different levels of gilui halachos in the place and different perceptions that the others had of what the place is going to be, etc. Point is, in other words, Avraham and Yitzchak both individually davened there after the Akedah and before Yitzchak met Rivka. So how did I go by there? Vanilo Yisfalati, and I didn't stop there to daven. So Kad Yohib died to the Meder, so he decided he is going to return. Now he had and therefore right away he encountered the place. So in other words, the word Vayifka has a double meaning, actually, that I should point out. The word Vayifka does mean to daven. This is where we learned that Yaakov davened Meir over there. But the word Vayifka literally means to encounter. So it means like all of a sudden he encountered it unexpectedly. And again, as Rashi mentions on the Pesukim, it means literally encountered in the sense that the place came towards him. Kad Soli, so he's diving over there, Boilamando, now he wanted to return. He's going to go ahead, start heading back to Haran. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzadik Zeb Bola Beis Maloni, the Tzadik has come to my dwelling place, the portable arena, who should leave without staying overnight. Even in later times, by the way, you have the din is, first he comes to the Beis Mikdash, for Al Dia Lerego, he has to stay overnight. If Amisa Bab Boiker, you only turn around in the morning, Ba'alach Zaloyalach. So he has to stay overnight. Miyad Bar Shemesh, so right away, to force Yaakov to stay, Hashem made the sun set. So, and that's why the puzzle is by Yifka Mamot and by Yolam Shom Kivu Hashem. She slept overnight there because the sun had set. Now, why does that say? Because the sun has set. The point is that it set early, and therefore he was forced to stay there. Let's go on with more of that story. So the puzzle says he took from the stones of the place, in plural, and put them around his head. Then after he got up in the morning, then it says he took the stone. So what is it? Is it many stones, or is it one stone? Now, Tosfos says Pashut Shat means one of the stones of the place. But here you have the famous Yerusha, all those stones gathered together, each one is saying that the tzaddik should rest his head on it. Tana, and we learn in a place of a whole new blue echad, all of them fused into one, and therefore it was tackle one stone.
It's interesting because at the end of the day, Yaakov is still laying on one, but once they're part of it.
Once they're part of it, it doesn't matter. One part was part of the same thing. It also hinted at the idea, for example, it was meant as a remez to Yaakov that a mitos is shlema, that unlike Avraham and Yitzchak, his children will all be tzaddikim, and they'll fuse together as one Jewish people. And then, of course, again, there are many, many symbolisms in this. Famously, the Rebbe talks about why is Yaakov protecting only his head? What about the rest of his body? And the verdict is, in other words, he's going to Haran, to this goyish place. He needs to particularly protect his head, his thoughts and his ideals and whatever, that they don't get, harmed and then corrupted by love on you. Next, the pasuk is about Yaakov. He had a dream that he is full of mutzav arza, and there's a ladder standing on the ground and head and reaching up to Shemayim. Tana, we learn about it. So, kama roch b'shul sulam. How wide was that ladder? Shmoina salaf and parsois. It was 8,000 parsa wide. A parsa is about 2 or 3 miles. So you're talking something like 20,000 miles, give or take. How do we know that? The pasuk says Malachim and Hashem were going up and down it. Now, Olim and Yodim suggests that you have two that are Olim and two that are Yodim all at the same time. So that means Olim Shnayim, Yodim Shnayim. It sounds like you have two Malachim going up and two going down. So at some point along the midpoint of the ladder, they're going to meet up in the middle. So therefore, so there has to be room for all four of them. So you have to have four malachim standing abreast. So the ladder has to be wide enough to be able to hold four malachim. And did Rebbe Malachok v'yosek esarshish? Now you have a pasuk where Daniel, in one of his visions of malachim, describes. He says his body was like tarshish. Now pasuk perhaps is tarshish is the name of a precious stone, and it means that his body shone like the tarshish stone. But here we're taking it that tarshish is the name of a sea. Rashi explains that, in fact, the Tarshish stone itself, the Targum translates Krum Yama, it has the appearance of a sea. We find, for example, Yonah going on a ship bound for Tarshish. So Tarshish is the name of a sea. Rashi, in the Pasuk and Daniel over there, defines it as Yama Shal Afrika, which would be the Sea of Africa. So either that means the Mediterranean, it can mean the Mediterranean, it can mean the Mediterranean, it can mean the Atlantic, it can mean the Indian Ocean, one of the bodies of water surrounding Africa. And we know the Tarshish Trey Alfi Kairos Nihabu, and we know that the Sea of Tarshish is 2,000 Kairos wide, so therefore, if each Malach is 2,000 Kairos wide, multiplied by 4, then you have 8,000 Kairos. Obviously, all these numbers are symbolic, and it's a dream, but nevertheless, I mean, it's still, the meanings.
It's a big ladder.
Right, but the meanings of these numbers are symbolic. One thing is, the Gemara mentions in some places, Shita Alfi Kairos Nihabu Alma, the entire world is 6,000 Kairos, so it represents in particular that three malachim basically will span the whole world. For example, you have the three primary malachim through which chesed, the malachim of chesed, Zura and Tiferes, Gabriel, and Raphael, respectively. So you have different things like that, and there's the idea also this ladder represents many, many different things. Mephoshim bring an enormous number of symbolisms of what the ladder represents, among other things it represents the avodah of the korbanos. So therefore, the idea would be saying that it's larger even than the world. The world is 6,000 parasa, and this ladder is 8,000, represents that you're talking about something which is even greater than the world. Next, Tana, we don't know the Braisa, why are the Malachim going up and down? And why they're going up first and then down? Why are they on earth first? They would go up and they would gaze at the image of Yaakov that's above. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that the image of Yaakov is engraved on the Kisei HaKavri. So representing, in other words, Yaakov is like accomplished the perfection of what a person could accomplish, and therefore, like an image of Yaakov there, like he represents the image of what Hashem wants a person to be. So they're sort of going up over there and looking at the image, the Yodin, Mestaklin, the Druk Neshamata, and then they're coming down and looking, yeah, it's the same image. This is the person whose image is engraved on the Kisei HaKavod. But now, Tosfos points out, by the way, according to this, this would actually not necessarily agree with the previous piece. We just said before that you have different malachim going up and down. Here now, the Gemara is giving us a different drasha that, in fact, they're going the same malachim are going up and then coming down. So, Bola Sakuni, they were about to endanger him. They were going to harm him out of their jealousy. Rashi explains when you say b'diuk neshamayla. Rashi says not on the kisei hakavod. Rashi says among the arba chayis, among the chayis hakodesh, where one of their faces is a human face. Which human face? There are billions of human faces, specifically the face of Yaakov. So now they're going and looking at the chayis hakodesh and seeing that, and seeing down here is the actual Yaakov. So now they were jealous of him. Miyad. So therefore, right away, Hashem stood there to protect him, and therefore it's zihini Hashem nitzavolav. Hashem stood over him to protect him. There's many different other explanations of why the Malachim are going up and down. The Medrash says another thing, that these are the Malachim who were gone and destroyed Sidoim, and they had spoken incorrectly. They had said, Mashkisim Anachim, and Malachim said, we're going to destroy the place. So Hashem threw them out of Shemayim, and now finally they're able to come back up. And then we have also what Rashi mentions in the Pasuk, the Malachim of Chutzlar, the Malachim of Eretz Yisrael, etc., etc. It would be impossible for us to say it ourselves. It's like when a person stands over there and fans him to protect him from the heat. The same way, Hashem is, so to speak, protecting Yaakov from the heat of the Malachim who otherwise would harm. Next, Hashem tells him, we're going to the land that you're lying on, then I'm going to give it to you and your descendants. My Rabosei, what's the big deal? It's a tiny bit of land. This teaches us that Hashem folded up the entire Eretz Yisrael and placed it under that place where Yaakov Avinu is, as a simon for that will be easy for his children to conquer. Rishonim points out, especially the Ramban, that when you have a promise of Hashem, which is accompanied by an action, then it means it's much more definitive that it's going to happen, and there won't be Shema Yigram Achet, and there won't be any other thing that would prevent it from happening. So here Hashem actually doing a Maisa and folding out all over there, demonstrated that it really is going to be so. There's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about the contrast with Avraham Avinu. He had to walk through Kumis Halach Ba'aretz, and with that, it's guaranteed that he's going to get out of Yisrael. He was saying, you don't even need to walk. You're just lying over there, sleeping, and that represents Shetei Neutha. It'll be easier. You don't have to walk through it. It's automatically going to be yours.
Avraham was clean.
Avraham was clean. But the point is that now Yaakov is lying on it, meaning that you don't even need to put in tremendous effort. You're just going to be able to, like, you're lying there, and it's going to be
absolutely comfy.
Yeah. So that was all digression talking about Yaakov by Yisrael HaShemesh. Now getting back to Yaakov and the Malach. So after Yaakov beat the Malach, by Yomer Shalfeini, so the Malach says, "Let me go." He Ola Hashachar because dawn has broken. Now why does the guy need to leave at dawn? Omaloi, so Yaakov tells him, "Ganavata." So what are you, thief? A Kuvyustasata or a Kuvyustas? Rashi translates a Kuvyustas as a kidnapper. Tosfos points out that there's a Gemara in Bechoros, which we'll learn in a couple of months, Be'ez Hashem, where Kuvyustus doesn't really suggest a kidnapper. It seems to represent some other kind of criminal. And Tosfos gives an explanation over there, but in any case, Tosfos says that no, Kuvyustus is Moloshin Mesachet Bekuvia, a gambler. Yeah. So thieves and gamblers like to hide out during the day because they don't want their creditors coming after them. So why do you need to leave now? Because it's Alos Hashachar. That you're afraid of the dawn. Amaloi, so the guy tells him, no, Malachani, I am a Malach. Ever since I was created, it never came my turn to say Shira to the Eibishter until now, and therefore I have to hold. Now, why is that not? Why Taka is it now 2,000 odd years into the world's history that he first gets the opportunity? So the famous explanation on that, because what does it mean when a Malach says Shira? What does it mean when any Nivra says a Shira? It means it's accomplishing what the Eibishter put it in the world for, and therefore it says Shira. You have the famous Perek Shira that goes through all the different Nivroim, and what they sing to Hashem conspicuously. By the way, a person is not there because a person has to work on himself. So for example, the Shemayim are created and they function as is, they don't change their ways, and they can be singing a Shira. The animals do exactly what the Eibishter program them in them, and they say Shira. A person has to work on themselves. Anyway, the verdict is, in other words, until a Nivra has accomplished what the Eibishter put it in the world for, then it can't be saying Shira. Now, this Malach of Esav is, among others, the Yetzer Hara. So now the Yetzirah's job, as we know, is his job is to be beaten. He has to put up a good fight. But as we know, the famous Moshul that the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya from the Zoyna, she wants to lose the contest, but she has to put in all the possible effort. So therefore, so now the Yetzirah is working over here for thousands of years. Never had he actually done his job because nobody ever tried to beat him. Now for the first time, Yaakov beat him. Now he says, "Oh, now I've fulfilled my purpose in the world. Now it's my time to say Shira."
That's good.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, "Messiah Rav Chananel Amar Rav." This supports what Rav Chananel says in the name of Rav. The Amar Rav Chananel Amar Rav, Shodesh Kitus Shemalachi Ashores, Oymeres Shira B'chol Yoyin. There were three groups of Malachi Ashores that say Shira to Hashem every day. Achas Emeres Kodesh. One of them says the first Kodesh. Ba'achas Emeres Kodesh. Ba'achas Emeres Kodesh Hashem Tzvachis. So that's why when you have an apostle, Kodesh, 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 Hashem Tzvachis, because there are three groups of Malachim, and each one is adding their part to the soul. So what does that mean? How does what the Malach had said to Yaakov, that I need to go because I have to sing Shira, how does that support what Rav Chananel was saying? First of all, it shows us the Malachim say Shira. Without Rav Chananel's statement, we would have known they say Shira, and then again, why is the Malach saying I need to leave? When he's saying the fact that I didn't have my time until now, that shows Rav Chananel is saying that the Malachim do not have permission to say very much Shira. Each one can only say one word, Kodesh, and therefore we can assume by the same token, says Tosfos, each one only has one opportunity to say Shira, and this Malach is saying, now it's my opportunity. The Gemara says, Nasi, though. The Gemara says, have a contradiction. So you're telling me the third group of Malachim is able to say Hashem's name, they can say Kodesh Hashem Tzvachis. But we learn in a brisa, the Jewish people are more precious to Hashem than Malach HaShadis. We Jewish people can say Shira whenever we want, so we have to work for it. We have to work to be worthy of saying Shira, but nevertheless, we can say it whenever we reach that level. The Malach HaShadis can only say Shira once a day. The Amil Pamach of the Shabbos. Others say they can say Shira only once every week. Others say only once a month. Others say only once a year. Others say only once every 7 years. Others say that the Malachim are only able to say Shira once every Yovel. Or others say only once in their lifetime, only once in their existence. So obviously, all of these opinions are true, and they refer to different levels of Malachim. The Rambam points out, you have 10 levels of Malachim, and here we have a bunch of different levels as far as how often they can say Shira. And furthermore, here's another difference. The Yisrael maskirin es Hashem after shtei tevis. We Jewish people are able to say Hashem's name in davening after only two words. Shenema Shema Yisrael Hashem. O Malach HaShadis ein maskirin es Hashem Malach HaShadis tevis. The Malachim have to say three words before they're ready to even pronounce Hashem's name. Kedichtiv Kodesh, 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 Hashem Tzvach. So you see that the Jewish people are greater than the Malach. Not only that, the Malach HaShadis up above are not even able to say Shira until the Jewish people down here say Shira first. Shenema, the pasuk says, "V'ron yachad koichvei boker," when the stars of the morning all sing together, which refers to the Jewish people who are compared in Pesukim to stars. We have Hashem promises Abraham and the other others that their descendants are going to be like the stars, etc. So when "V'ron yachad koichvei boker," when the morning stars sing, "V'hoder," and only then "V'yoriu kol bnei alekim," then as the pasuk continues, all the bnei alekim, which means the malachim, are able to shout and sing to Hashem. So we see many different ways in which our shira is greater than that of the malachim. Anyway, the point is that the Malachim was saying have to say three words before they're even ready to say the Eibishter's name, and here the Chananel is telling us that it's only one. So Gemara says no. Ela, no. What the Chananel meant is each one adds to what came before. Achas emeres kodesh. Ba'achas emeres kodesh kodesh. Ba'achas emeres kodesh kodesh kodesh. Hashem tzvachos. And therefore, even the one that says Hashem's name has to say three words first. One idea is, you have different olamos. You have Malachim that are in olam ha'yitzira and olam ha'briya and olam ha'tzilus, and therefore each one says their kodesh, representing there's a world higher than us before we can even begin having any comprehension of Hashem tzvachos. Okay, the Gemara says, Va'ika Baruch. What about though? You also have the Malachim that said Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkoyma. And they're saying after two words. And the answer is, Baruch Eifanim Uda Amilei. First of all, the answer is that the who says Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkoyma is the Eifanim, which is a higher level Malachim.
They are.
So there you have Malachim that can say after two, as opposed to, Tosfos explains, who says Kodesh is the Serafim. And the Serafim are lower than Eifanim. So that's one answer. Tosfos points out interesting details over here in davening that come out from this. So the chayas also say Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkoyma, because again the chayas are even higher than the Eifanim, so they're also able to say it. They're also able to say with it. And in fact, the pasuk Baruch Kvod Hashem Mimkoyma continues by describing the sound of the wings of the chayas and the sound of the Eifanim. And then the Eifanim always go together with chayas. Postus goes on to talk about details about the difference between the Serafim and the Chayas and different differences between those levels. Anyway, so that's one answer. The Borisema, or another answer you can say, given the Isihib, Rishusa Isihib. Once permission has been granted, permission is granted. In other words, once the first group of Malachim said Kodesh, 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 and said three times, three words before they're even ready to say Hashem's name, then already permission is granted, and now another group of Malachim are able to say it after only two words. Meanwhile, we Jewish people don't even need that. We're able to say Shema Yisrael Hashem without any prompting before that.